a basic human right, and that is the right to know. And the idea that the university has failed up to this point to fully honor and respect people's right to know because they have failed to create an accessible body of knowledge, and there is a lovely multiplicity of meanings within the word accessible, because accessible doesn't just mean open accessible. You didn't consider, Leslie, the term open accessible at the Budapest meeting? Jean Claude? Where's Jean-Claude? The notion that accessible means multiple forms of access. It means that it's accessible in a way that I can begin to understand. Accessible in a way that I can take hold of that knowledge and I can use it. Whether to confront the Ministry of Education, whether to provide solace to my family by understanding the progression of the disease, that I can take and use that knowledge, as it were, because I have an environment where I can understand through repeated contact, through seeing a concept used in multiple different ways, by seeing it in terms of a newspaper story, a research article, a background piece. So the idea that, in fact, the educational climate that we're creating here, that we're contributing to, in terms of the spirit of a public knowledge, is an educational climate. And the notion that this public education is going to be, for the first time, in some senses, on a global basis, and the participation in this public exchange is something that the university is going to be in the lead, is going to demonstrate leadership around, but that is going to do it on a basis not of center and periphery, as the university is a center and the community is seen as a periphery. Not even on an equally accessible basis, like the Woodward building, where there will be classes taught in one room and there will be, as it were, inexpensive housing in another, but on the notion that as a university we need to be open, that we need to be accessible in multiple meanings of that word, that we don't need to dilute, and we don't need, as it were, to write down or dumb down the work that we do. Because the work that we do is only valuable insofar as it does have that quality, that intellectual property of research and scholarship. But that we shouldn't prejudge, that we shouldn't decide in advance who should have access, who has earned the right, who has an adequate reading level to tap into this knowledge. What we need to say, very simply and very basically, is that people have the right to know what is known. They have the right to see that, in fact, what is known is not always as certain as we might imagine, that what is known is changing. People complain about the Wikipedia because one day it's this, and the next day it's that. And Stephen Colbert can have a lot of fun with that. But I don't know about you, in my journals, the same thing happens. It's not one day. But over the course of 2 or 3 years, what was once this is now that, whether it's in labels or in research findings or in evidence or in policy of that. So this idea that we can begin to be a little more open about our work is the critical notion behind the public knowledge project. The idea that we can be a little more open about the research that we do is a critical notion in the public knowledge project. And what I want to suggest to you as a kind of final closing moment on this is that this isn't the new part. This isn't the innovation that Mario is referring to, that FFU is clearly the center and leadership in, and that UBC is exhausted and panting and trying to catch up with. Not any of that, no. The innovative part of this is not the openness to science. The openness of science is the consistent, is the constant here. And that the quality of science has always been about the degree to which it is open, and that what we are involved in a project like the Public Knowledge Project is just an extension. In fact, there's a lovely play on the notion of extension, as the first outreach of the universities in the 19th century was based on a notion of extension and the extension courses, when people got on trains and left Oxford and Cambridge and went out and did, as it were, extension work in the community. The idea that we can extend the openness of research and scholarship is the basic principle. And that at the core of that, let me just come back to this final aspect, and that is the core of that is a principle of access. And that the projects that each of us is involved in whether we're working on the commercial side of things or we're working on the public university side or the private sector, nonprofits or NGOs, the core principle for me is the ways, the multiple ways, that we increase access. And I look forward tomorrow and on Friday to learning much more about your projects around these themes. Thank you very much. It would be such a crime and a shame if we didn't have a few questions from the representatives. But I would ask you all to keep your shoes on. Because I know that some of you remember that famous moment when Peter Khrushchev visited the United Nations. And Nixon earlier, no, in Kennedy years, and emphatically made his point by removing his shoe. The chair recognizes Rolly Lorimer's sandal. Always laid back on Rolly Lorimer. So I questions that people would enjoy raising from the floor. First you raise your hand. I'm checking if the sandal sound is there. Then you turn on the light. I just turn on the light. Oh, yes.
It works, I think.
Well,
John. Sorry, I'm Bobby Graham from the National Library of Australia. Your title was 10 years after. It was a terrific presentation. Thank you very much for that. Would you like to give us some sense of 10 years hence, perhaps looking into the future, and how you feel that might develop?
Yeah, I do have a section of the talk actually called Thanks for the 10 Years After, because it works, right? What you're asking me, what's going to happen 10 years after this? Yeah. So we're very consistent in terms of the title. There are elements that we have focused on for the next year or two. But it seems to me, I feel very comfortable saying a couple of things about 10 years after. One is that the print journal is going to be a rarity. I think I feel very comfortable saying that. And that open access will be a public and scholarly expectation. It won't be entirely the case, but what I think is the most encouraging element in terms of the wave of the future is that there is a rising public expectation of access. And that the notion of that access increasing quality, the quality of knowledge. And if you think about some of the recent scandals in science, when peer review fails to detect serious, profound problems in research, the falsification of data in the case of cloning, that in fact it was a kind of public access among graduate students, albeit, but that it was the wide circulation of the materials that led to the detection of that. So the idea that the print journal, and again, I'm very sentimental about the book. It falls to somebody else to predict the end of the book in any means. And I was very fond, I am very fond. We have some lovely journals, the Harvard Educational Review in my field is so carefully color-coded that after 10 years you've got a decorator wall in your office. And I really did feel bad having to make a move. I recently made a move. And the Harvard Educational Review after 20 years, you know, really sets the tone for your office. And I had to turn. Because in the last 5 years, I haven't opened a single one. So I had used the Harvard Educational Review on a regular basis in my teaching because I went online. Because I cannot reach into those colors and say, oh, chartreuse. Yes, a chartreuse. When Henry Giroux published that article criticizing Joe Kinchlow, well, yes, that was, I went online. And so the idea, and I meet graduate students who not only do their entire degree in their pajamas, which I find a little scary, but that are not using the library in the same way. So the idea of the print journal is, on the one hand, we can talk about those kind of technology things, but the more important element is this rising public expectation. And what we are going to do in the public schools, among teachers, is we are going to encourage and foster and nurture that expectation. And so that there will be a generation of some of your children, who will say, why isn't it? How is it that I don't have access to this? What am I not a part of that I am not allowed to know what's been discovered? And that would be my safest and most encouraging element. Whether Elsevier will donate its entire content to the public domain for a tax write-off, I'm not so sure about. But publishing models have to change. There is an irrationality in current publishing models, current discrepancies in price that cannot be sustained. What that magic center, and again, a good center perfect model, but that magic center economically will be delayed open access, mandated access, what it will be, I'm not sure of that. But I am certain that the amount